America and all of our listeners all around the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host and the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Chris Sologi. Say hi to the good people, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah, so two-man crew this week, but we got plenty of shit to talk about. Let's put it that way. As a bunch of stuff happened this week, as it usually does, but this one was particularly kind of off the wall. This episode is going to be for December 9th, 2023. We are now firmly in the holiday season, and everywhere you fucking go, there's tinsel, there's fucking green pine needles, there's fucking Mariah Carey on the radio, and I'm already fucking sick of it. But, you know, you always remind yourself, yeah, you know, it can be annoying, but there's good stuff about the holidays as well. Just have to wait until the couple days beforehand for that to happen. But anyway, what are we talking about this week? Well, we now know what it is that former President Donald J. Trump is intending to do if he manages to win the 2024 election, God forbid. There are shenanigans going down with Texas over a woman who, well, we'll get to it, but basically she had received permission to get an emergency abortion, and then the Attorney General of Texas decided to poke his ass into it, and, well, it's a clusterfuck. We'll get to that. We also know who Time Magazine's Person of the Year is going to be. We found out another major congressperson is going to be retiring at the end of the year, one in quite a few stepping down this year. We got more, another bit in the ongoing Hunter Biden saga, I guess. We also got a bunch of entertainment stuff to talk about as well, including a Hideo Kojima's documentary, when Barbie will debut on streaming, and we got a couple of trailers from a couple different places, including the new live-action anime remake from Netflix. So yeah, we'll be talking about all that and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. But as always, we'll start off, as we usually do, as is tradition, talking about all the shit we've been doing this weekend. As always, tradition, we start with Chris. Chris, what have you been doing this week?
Been dealing with the sort of after effects of this cold for the most part, which hasn't been fun. Just a lot of coughing and getting real gummed up with mucus, which is fun.
Yeah, been there.
Where you're just doing things, and then all of a sudden your nose just decides to clog up for whatever reason. So that's been fun. But I've been doing some stuff. I went to the theater yesterday and saw The Boy and the Heron, the latest Studio Ghibli movie in a good bit of years. And it's very good. I don't know that it's a standout one of these, but it is very good for what their typical work is. Story-wise, it's not really all that surprising compared to the other stuff. You know, you got a boy who in the middle of World War II in Japan. There's a big fire that kills his mom.
Yeah.
So he and his dad move out to the countryside, where to like the mom's family estate kind of thing, and see some weird shit going on. Decides to investigate and find some means to get to another world of wild stuff happening, and deals with all the stuff going on with that. And then, yeah, that's kind of a quick summary of things that go on there. But yeah, I watched the English dub, which was a very good dub. For that, has a lot of known talent to it. Christian Bale and Robert Pattinson plays the Heron.
Yeah.
And all that kind of stuff. And yeah, very well done. Definitely recommend people go check it out. So yeah, there you go for that. But yeah, finished up watching all the new episodes of My Hero Academia. mm-hmm. where shit's been going down as a result of what happened previously. And yeah, that's a very good show there. So mm-hmm. kind of does a good thing where, you know, things are escalating appropriately, at least for the heroes here. And Deku kind of has to deal with being sort of the bait for the bad guys, and has a nice little, you know, morphing into the dark place that kind of stuff can take on a person. So yeah, that's about all I'll say about that. It's pretty fun. Looking forward to whenever they have more, but I assume this is the end of the season or something. So I'm looking forward to seeing more of that. But yeah, what else I've been doing? Watching King of the Hill, because looking at what else to do on Hulu, and that was one thing I could do. So yeah, in season 2, I think, of that. Still love it. Still a very good show.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, that's been pretty much all I've been watching for games. Not been playing too much, just kind of dealing with the kind of lethargic nature of being sick. So I haven't played too much of things, but did get back into Fortnite. Got their new battle pass, which has Peter Griffin in it from Family Guy. And he's buff now, at least from, you know, shoulders down, which they explain in like a little Family Guy short kind of thing. Where he takes like the Fortnite slurp, and that makes him buff, I guess. So that's weird. But yeah, they added a bunch of stuff for this season, some new stuff. So I've been kind of checking that out. But they also added 3 new games into there from their various teams, where there's Lego Fortnite, which is a survival thing. Which is pretty neat. They have converted a lot of the skins, Fortnite skins, to Lego forms. So you have to kind of pay attention to which ones you have, because they'll tell you which ones it's compatible with for that. So like I forget what I had, a Goku or something that wasn't compatible with Lego. So it just gives you a generic like Lego, Lego girl thing to control. But then I figured out like, oh, what to look for. And so I was playing with Lego Obi-Wan, which worked out pretty well. The mode was pretty buggy at times. I had the game crash a couple of times on me. That was pretty annoying, but it's a pretty standard kind of survival game, maybe in the vein of not really a Minecraft, because you're not placing stuff down block by block, but you're essentially setting up a home base and then expanding that to, you know, putting down like a town square that allows other people to come in and do stuff there, as far as like NPCs, that kind of stuff. And yeah, like when you build your home base, your little home thing, you get to like put down the chunks of the home together. Almost like a Lego kit, though it's not as granular as that. It's more like, here's the different like wall pieces and whatnot for it, though it's an open building, because it's like three-sided open with one closed. And so, yeah, you kind of have to pay attention to like temperature stuff. You go out at night when it's raining, it's, you know, you're getting cold, and that affects you in some ways. I don't think it's anything like super simulation-y kind of thing. It's a matter of like discouraging you from going out in the cold rain kind of stuff, I guess. But yeah, you build like a bonfire to warm yourself around, but it doesn't have like the Minecraft, you know, you go to bed and you wake up in the morning kind of thing. You skip the night because it's pretty dark out there from what I've seen. You can get torches and that kind of stuff, but yeah, you're kind of doing all the basic stuff of collecting wood and rock and using that to make or build a crafting bench that you can make, you know, pickaxe and an axe and a sword and a shovel, all that kind of stuff. And you got animals around, sheep and cows and that kind of stuff. And they, you pet them and they drop one of their items. It's like a sheep drops some wool, cow drops some milk, that kind of stuff. So you get to the point of making food and spinning the silk you get from spiders that attack, and there's wolves and all that kind of stuff. You can go into caves to fight skeletons and get more materials, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's like that kind of escalation of materials and all that, which is a pretty solid experience. So you can have, I think, up to 8 people total on a server. Maybe be able to have more, but they have a notion of giving tickets out to people that can jump in whenever. I think that's the way it goes. But it also has a bunch of options that you can turn off, but you can't do it for an existing save. This, I think it locks it for that when you create it. So if you want one without, you know, enemy mobs or, you know, without the temperature stuff or, you know, your hunger meter, that kind of stuff, you can do that if you want. So you can kind of have a fairly granular experience there for that stuff. So that's pretty solid. Rocket Racing is the other one I played because it was the music one just came out today. But that is a racing game. Kind of like if you had Mario Kart, but no weapons to it. So, you know, you have the start, you know, you have the whole thing where you press the gas at the right time, you get a boost out of it. So they tell you, like, you know, you got 96% boost. You almost hit the perfectly. It's more granular than that. But you have like actual speedometers, you're watching, you do drifts and such to fill up a boost meter that is in like 3 chunks. And then if you use your boost at a certain point, it'll tell you to press, you know, triangle or Y to do a, you know, like top off your boost kind of thing. That kind of stuff. You can jump because it's, you know, a Rocket League ish kind of racing game. You also have like a dodge, midair dodge kind of thing. You don't have the like forward double jump thing that Rocket League has. It's just kind of to the sides. And I thought it was a pretty cool thing until I somehow destroyed my car because I technically leaped off the side of the road in the midair kind of stuff. But you can also in sort of tunnels and such, you can essentially jump up to the ceiling and ride on the ceiling, which reminds me of some racing games from like the PS1 era that had that kind of thing to it that I can't remember the name for. So I'll have to look that up when I bring it up tomorrow. But there's that kind of stuff. You're playing multiplayer with other people. You get a handful of actual humans, mostly bots early on when you're playing it. As you're ranking up, your rank kind of goes up or down based on how you finish. So if you're finishing probably at least the top 6 out of 12, you're probably boosting up your rank a bit until it finds, you know, a sweet spot where you're generally sticking around. But yeah, it's solid, but it's not, there's no like great hook to it as far as I can tell. There's nothing that makes it, you know, feel like something I want to keep coming back to compared to, you know, other stuff I have for that purpose. So that's pretty solid. And then the other game I've been playing some of my Steam Deck, Halls of Torment, the Diablo 2-esque Vampire Survivors clone. I've been putting some more time into that and enjoying it. Kind of more focusing on trying to actually accomplish the in-game quest stuff to unlock stuff, unlock more things. Haven't done much on the character front on that, but I have been. They have an interesting mechanic where you get loot, but at a certain point, the loot you have to take it to like a well and sort of put it into a bucket to get pulled back up by a merchant that you meet, that you unlock at a certain point, and then you can buy it from them to add it to your potential starting, you know, loadout for that stuff. So you're kind of, whenever you see something new, you want to kind of do that, but you only get to do it once per run. So it kind of keeps you from getting long runs and just putting all a bunch of that stuff up and, you know, setting it up to your base, essentially. Mm. So that's a pretty neat mechanic. I did finish one run, lasted the whole 30 minutes. So that's felt pretty good. Mm. I think I beat the boss. I forget. I think I did for that. So yeah. I had the achievement for kill a total of one Lord, the Lord of Pain.
Yeah.
For one of the maps. So that's pretty good. We'll work to unlock more stuff, but yeah, it's been fun to keep playing. So that's been it for me. So Brandon, what have you been doing?
Well, as for me, I finally bit the bullet and I bought the remake of Super Mario RPG for the Nintendo Switch. And, you know, the moment I turned it on and started playing, it was the waves of nostalgia that just all over me, just boom, boom, one after the other, because I remember playing this game back when I was in elementary school. Like, that's how young I was when this game came out. And I remember, here is one of the things you have to remember about me with Super Mario RPG is Super Mario RPG was actually the first RPG that I played. Because you have to understand, I was kind of a late bloomer when it came to like learning to read. So the idea of being able to like read something in a game was kind of new to me. But also you have to understand that RPGs we love RPGs here, obviously, but for outsiders, RPGs can be a little esoteric to get into. And part of the genius of Super Mario RPG was that it took a lot of the basic RPG mechanics and simplified them and streamlined them in a way that made them a lot easier to understand. Specifically how they assign like various actions to button presses instead of like a list you got to scroll through. That was like a major big deal. So, you know, that in particular is a major part of major reason why that ended up being like the very first RPG I managed to play to completion. And enjoyed like every bit of it too. Because it is a genuinely amazing and fun game. I will say though that I kind of forgot that in hindsight it's actually kind of a short game. Like, you know, as far as RPGs are concerned. Because when you're a kid, it seems a lot bigger in your imagination than it actually is. But still, that game is so much fun. And I love the fact that they basically redid all of the graphics from scratch. Updated them all to like fully three-dimensional, pieces on the screen instead of, you know, the old way that they did it with, you know, the bits and stuff and the pre-rendered backgrounds. And they basically, like, I remember like all the in-jokes and stuff, and they literally, all the in-jokes are still in there. All the weird little stuff that you remember from the original game, going into Peach's bedroom early on in the game and going into her bedroom and finding Peach's ? Which they never tell you is, but it's heavily like suggested it's like her unmentionables or like a vibrator or something. I thought for sure they would have taken that out. No, it's still there. And you still like get the reward in turn for, you know, not talking about it. The being able to find like Link and Samus like sleeping in the beds in the inns, it's still there. All of them still there. I will say they did make some like very generous, I think, quality of life updates and some built upon the foundation. For example, if you time your attacks right, instead of just hitting one person, it'll like send out a wave that'll like damage the other enemies. Also, enemies have like a weakness now. So like various, especially like the bosses, if you can figure out what their weaknesses are, it'll basically knock them out for like a turn or two, which is a huge help. They also have an auto saving feature, and they also added a fast travel mechanic as well. So you don't have to like constantly try to, you know, well, it just makes it easier to navigate the map now. They've also definitely added in some additional stuff too, that I'm pretty sure wasn't there. Like like going into the sewer level, and there's like a whole area where like you're swimming. I'm not sure if that was in the original game. It might have been, but the difference is like the water is like see-through, and you can actually like see, you know, see the bottom of it now. And also, you know, they made like some fully rendered cutscenes as well, which actually is pretty nice. It's a damn good remake, with just all the good stuff, and it's amazing. I'm glad that this exists now. But on top of that, I've also still been playing Thirsty Suitors. I'm actually almost finished with it. I've only got the last boss. I think the last boss. I'm very close to the end of it now. You should never play that game on an empty stomach, because you will be craving some serious craving for Indian food by the end of it. Those cooking mechanics, man. Also, it's a weirdly like big, good, like a peek into like, you know, South Asian culture, and especially being Asian American. And, you know, just apparently it's not a stereotype. There are a lot of Asian parents who put an awful lot of pressure on their offspring. And there is like a genuine sort of cultural disconnect between, you know, families of immigrants and families back in the home country. So, yeah. Other than that, what I've been reading, books, you know, the same as usual. I've been reading this book called Moondance by S.P. Sumto. Sumto is a guy I could probably go on a whole tangent about, because he's had an astonishingly fascinating life. He's apparently like a distant part of Thai royalty. He's originally from Thailand, but he moved to England when he was a little kid, so English is his first language. His day job is as like a composer and conductor of like classical music and avant-garde. He's composed like ballets and operas. He's like the artistic director for the Bangkok Opera. But he also is like a very prolific writer of science fiction, fantasy, and horror literature over here in the West. And Moondance is essentially like it's a horror novel about werewolves. Well, it's about werewolves, but it's specifically about werewolves who are originally from Austria, who are immigrating over to the U.S. because they're finding it harder and more difficult to be able to continue living their werewolf lives over in Austria as, you know, time progresses on. So they decide they're going to immigrate to the U.S. and go out to like start a colony or a frontier. But then they end up encountering a group of Native American werewolves as well. So suddenly there's this huge thing about, you know, colonialism and all this stuff. And it's just, it's really damn good. And on top of that, just dealing with Christmas shit, man. I have now heard that fucking Mariah Carey song about 30 times, and I hate it. You know, I said last week that, you know, the store that I work at had not been very hard on the Christmas, at least for now. They are now. And I am about half ready to blow my fucking brains out. So, yeah.
Are they just on the radio station for all that?
Yep.
Which has like 8 songs and the various covers of it?
Yep.
Where you're like, why can't you even play, like, you know, Run DMC's Christmas songs and some of the other stuff?
Yeah, like, they won't play, like, you know, it won't play, you know, like, Father Christmas by the Kinks or Merry Christmas Baby by Bruce Springsteen or, you know, the shit that people actually want to hear. But, you know, they'll go in hard on the Bing Crosby.
They'll show you that, what, Beach Boys Rudolph song?
Yeah.
you're like, this is older than everybody that works here.
Yeah. Or Elvis's Blue Blue Christmas or, you know, that shit. But yeah.
Which the Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree just hit number one on the billboards for the first time ever.
See, that's like the one song out of all of those that's actually like worth a damn.
Yeah, because it's different and interesting.
All the other ones are like really fucking like maudlin and shit. Have you ever noticed that? They're like these weirdly maudlin and depressing songs with like, you know, just like I know like at the time period it was supposed to like inspire like warm feelings of home, but now it's just fucking depressing.
Yeah.
You know, I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. Me too, because I'm never going to get one in my fucking lifetime.
At least play the, what was it, the Marshmallow Christmas song?
Yeah, at least that one's good.
That one's in some commercial that keeps being annoying. So. Mm-hmm.
But anyway. All right, so do you have anything else we want to add, Chris, before we move on?
Nope.
All right, well then, it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And, you know, Smashpad is more than anything a video game-related site, and I do like to talk about video game-related history whenever I get the chance on this. And I decided, you know, I've been having to deal with all that Christmas shit this week, so I might as well just go ahead and, you know, talk about something I like to talk about. Chris, do you remember what the first video game you played was, or at least remember playing?
Probably Super Mario Brothers 3, I think.
Yeah. I actually play, okay, so...
Or maybe Pac-Man on an arcade.
Yes. So, funny story, as far as I go, my first video game experience as far as arcades was actually Galaga. And I know that because my dad was trying to teach me how to get the, you know, the additional ships that you can get.
Yeah, where you let your ship get captured.
Yeah, and then you shoot the ship that captured it, and then, you know, if you depending on where you're at, it'll like start fighting alongside you, and you'll get double or even triple shots. Yeah, and I remember that because that was a big deal. But like the first actual like video game I played, like I remember playing, it was not Super Mario Brothers. That was actually the second game I remember playing. The first video game I played, I cannot for the life of me remember what it was called, like not at all. All I remember is, and no, it wasn't like Ghouls and like Ghosts and Goblins or anything like that. All I remember is you were playing a knight with a sword, and it was like, you know, it was a 2D plane going right to left. I mean, left to right, you know. And, you know, you could hack monsters with a sword, and every time you died, he would fall down. And I remember very distinctly his death animation was that he was lying on the ground, but, like, his right leg was, like, drooping off the side of the ground and sort of, like, hanging and swinging there. I don't know why that's what I remember, but all I remember is the idea is, like, wait, I can do stuff on this, and the TV will do it? That's awesome. So, yeah. We're kind of lucky in that we grew up in the era where video games had become like, I don't want to necessarily say they had become like a mature platform, because that is so not the case, but it had become a medium, a thing that actually, you know, existed and had become an industry and wasn't a novelty anymore. But there was a time, of course, when that wasn't the case. Video games, as far as like all the major mediums goes, is basically the youngest of all of them. It has only been around since the 1960s at the earliest. I mean, the absolute earliest. But when we talk about like the first video games, usually people think, well, the very first video game or computer game or whatever you want to call it was Tennis for Two. And that was played on like a radar screen. And then the first, like, arcade, well, first, like, proper computer game that, you know, played on a computer screen was Space War, which was a space fighting game where you played two different spaceships trying to shoot each other, and there was, like, a black hole in the center that you had to avoid, or, you know, it would kill you. And then, of course, when it came to, like, arcades, like video arcades, the first video game was Pong, and Pong was basically a revelation. It basically started, more or less started the arcade, video game arcade thing as we know it. But video game consoles actually predate Pong by a couple of years. And in fact, video game consoles have been around longer than arcade video games for the arcade have. And that's what we're going to talk about this week, very briefly. The very first video game console was the Magnavox Odyssey. It was first released in 1972 and then overseas the following year. It was produced by, well, it was developed by Sanders Associates, and I'll get to the guy who was in charge of that in a second. And it was manufactured by Magnavox, which is one of the, back then was one of the major electronics companies. It's been a part of, it's been like a subsidiary of Philips Corporation since 1975. But this thing came, when it came out, it's shocking how in some ways it's very primitive, and yet compared to, like, you know, some of the machines that would come after, it was shockingly ahead of its time in many ways. So what you need to know about the Odyssey, it was created by a gentleman named Ralph Baer, who was working for a company called Sanders Associates. Sanders Associates was a defense contractor out of New Hampshire. And he signed up on them pretty much since the day they opened. And while he was working back in the early 50s for Sanders Associates, he was ordered to build a television. And while he was doing it, he got the ideas like, what would be a neat idea if you could put something into the television so that you could actually control it and make like a game of it? And he pitched the idea to the higher ups and said, not really a thing, you know, it's for a defense contractor, go back doing what you were. But so, you know, he was like, all right, whatever. And he basically forgot about it for the next 10, 15 years until around 1966, when he was waiting for a bus and the idea suddenly just popped into his head. So what happened is he and a fellow engineer that he got to sort of, he kind of roped into it, sort of took the idea, and they created a prototype called the Brown Box. Now, if you ever see that, if you ever go to the National Video Game Museum in Texas, they have a replica that was actually constructed by Ralph Baer himself before he passed away in 2014. And obviously, you know, it's called the Brown Box because it's got like brown, you know, wooden paneling on it because, I mean, that be honest, this was the 60s, you know, late 60s, early 70s, and a lot of futuristic shit had that wood paneling on it. It was just of the times. And if you look at this thing, it's like you can definitely see, like, it's very crude, but you can definitely like see the guts of what would become a video game console. You got the console itself, which is this big brown box. It's got a number. It's got a bunch of numbers on it with switches, and those, you know, those switches would go to like various programs. You got two pairs of control. You got two controllers, a pair of controllers. Not unlike, you know, the later ones for like the Atari or whatever. There were no joysticks or buttons involved. Well, there was one button. That was the quote unquote serve button. I'll get to that. And then of course there was the knobs that you use to both vertical and and right and left, so you could move around. And there was also a knob to turn it on and off. It also had a early form of the light gun, which in this case took the form of like a sort of plastic. I think it was like they had taken apart like a toy shotgun and like added a what become a light gun shooter thing into it. And they developed a couple of games for it. One was a chase game where one player tried to chase around another player in order to, you know, capture them. There was also another one that was the, like I said, the previously mentioned light gun shooter where you could shoot, you know, squares on there and somebody else could try and move it around. And then there was finally a handball game. We'll be getting to that one because that one's going to be important later. So So they showed this prototype to the higher ups, and they were, you know, they liked it, but they weren't entirely sure what they were going to do with it. But either way, the higher ups said, you know what, we'll give you some cash to develop this a little further, and we'll see what you can do with it. And eventually, the CEO of the company, Royden Sanders, authorized the project to be continued. And what he wanted to do is he wanted to sell or license it as a commercial product, which is ultimately what would happen. So eventually what happened is they managed to demonstrate this at a sales convention. And it was an immediate hit. As soon as word started to go around, people were basically like, because they had this thing in like a tiny room that was like off the sales, the major convention floor. And eventually what happened is it got packed with people trying to play the game. And the thing was, the game that they were using as the sort of prototype to show it off was a handball game wherein there were two square dots on each side. There was a line down the center and a smaller dot that was a little ball. And the object was to go, you know, hit the ball back and forth, you know. And, you know, it happened by, you know, having the larger square connect with the ball. That would, you know, count as a hit, and it would go back and back and forth and back and forth until eventually one missed it and it went off, and that counted as a point. Now, if that sounds vaguely familiar, well, that's because one of the individuals saw this prototype performing was a little known gentleman by the name of Nolan Bushnell. And just a couple years later, Nolan Bushnell would found a little company called Atari, and they would take that prototype, basically rip it off wholesale, and create what would become Pong. Now, for the record, I do need to point this out. The major difference between what Bayer created and what Pong was that if you've ever played a game of Pong, you can only move the little, quote, you know, paddles or whatever, up and down. You can't move them side to side or anything else like that. Not so with the Bayer version. In the Bayer version, you could basically move it all around, you know, on the side of the screen that you were on at any time. But eventually what happened is Magnavox ended up getting wind of this thing, and they decided to buy it, and in mid-September 1972, they started putting it out there. It made an early appearance on a October 16th episode of What's My Line. They referred to it as the new electronic game of the future and the closed-circuit electronic playground, because the term video game had not been invented yet. The piece that came in a much more slickly and much nicer looking white box that came with a set of game cards. The controllers were redesigned so that the dials were on either end of the controller instead of on top like they were in the prototype. The reset knob was redone into a reset button that was placed in the middle of the controller that you could, you know, press at any time. And the cord that connected them was connected to the side of the controller, much like how the original Famicom controllers were. And again, the game came with several pieces of paraphernalia that we'll get to it. And there was also the light gun that also was a peripheral controller that was sold separately. Now, the way that it was done was that if you were going to play the handball game, you actually could change the game in such a way as change rules so it become a different sport. For example, the Magnavox Odyssey came with a set of plastic overlays that you could attach onto the top of the television screen so that if you were playing tennis, you could get the tennis overlay. If you were playing soccer, you could play the soccer overlay. If you were playing hockey, you'd get the hockey overlay. And it wasn't just for the sports, too. The Chase game could be remade into a skiing game where you could use an inlay to turn it into a mountain ski path. You could even transform it into a Simon Says game, which will be important later. I will bring that up in a minute because Ralph Baer wasn't finished after he did this. And on top of all of this, the Odyssey also came with dice, poker chips, score sheets, play money, and a deck of cards. Because you could also use this to play poker and keep, you know, score with. It was a surprisingly like very involved system for something that was very primitive by modern standards. But it was, you know, its success was, it did okay. Like, it wasn't a failure by any means. It sold quite a bit, but the problem was it only sold about 69,000 units, which was lower than the 140,000 consoles they had produced in that year. It's also possible that some dealers may have fudged some stuff and misled customers. Also, Magnavox restricted sales to its dealerships instead of like sending them out to regular stores. It's also been heavily suggested that some salesmen suggested that they only worked with Magnavox televisions, which isn't true at all. The Magnavox themselves said that these were like in line with original projections. That's up in the air. There was another Magnavox Odyssey that was made, Odyssey 2, that came out later, right around the time when the original Atari was making the rounds. But by that point, Atari had pretty much taken over the field, as it were. But don't feel sorry for Ralph Baer, because even though this particular project kind of fell through, as successful as it was, he did end up making something else that ended up becoming a cultural sensation. See, amongst his other creations, he had been coming up with this idea of creating a toy where a little program in the toy would have like a bunch of pieces on the toy of different colors, and a little program in the toy would light up one of the colors with sound, and then it would play a sequence of those colored pieces, and then you had to repeat the sequence yourself, and the sequence would become more and more complex until you either lost or managed to beat it. We, of course, know this particular game as Simon. It's a progress on Simon Says, but this modern-day Simon game is still very much, it was a part of my childhood, it was part of a lot of our childhoods. It arguably became more well-known and more successful, far more successful than the Magnavox Odyssey did. But we really can't forget the fact that the Odyssey essentially started the entire platform for what would eventually become the video game console, and pretty much laid out everything that modern video game consoles would come with. The essential console box itself, the controllers that come in a set of two, the cord that connects them, even if in this case it was pre-attached, the idea of a gun-based peripheral, feelies, and all of that other stuff. You know, the idea of putting in game cards or cartridges or whatever to start a particular program or function, all of that stuff was started by the Brown Box all the way back in the late 60s. And we've got Mr. Baer to thank for it, and that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. So, with that, it is now time to move on to the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we have to start off with our assholes of the week. And our major assholes of the week are President Trump and his allies, because we now know what they're basically planning to do I'm not going to say if and when, because God forbid he ever manages to get power again. I highly doubt that he is, but that's also what I said last time, so I'm not going to jinx it. We now know what he is planning to do if he gets back in power. He basically wants to turn himself into a straight-up, no-shit authoritarian dictator. And his allies are basically sort of you know, telegraphing what they're intending to do.
Yeah. Yeah, let's see what details they have here. Yeah, planning to expand executive power. Mm. Yeah, Paul Dans, former Trump administration officials, director of the 2025 Presidential Transition Project, a conservative think tank organizing dozens of partners who joined the effort to build this government in waiting. Mm. Yeah, there's another one going on called Pathway to 2025.
Yeah.
They share the belief that too many federal workers at executive branch agencies, whom they call the administrative state or deep state, have become a fourth branch of government and have turned into a roadblock for any conservative change.
Yeah, you noticed that, did you?
Yeah, it's like they're a nullifying force for either side. To not get completely what they want.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But yeah, the federal workforce is made up of tens of thousands of non-political career civil servants who remain on their jobs regardless of who is the president.
Mm.
And Trump thinks there are too many liberals.
Mm-hmm.
AKA people that don't think like him.
Mm-hmm.
There are not enough conservatives in government, which leads to groupthink at some agencies. So this is one guy from another conservative think tank. So he likes the idea of training more conservatives, but he says the current plans are not durable, can be reversed by a subsequent Democratic administration. Mm. What's worse, he says, is this would only worsen the policy whiplash that is already plaguing Washington. But yeah, the Biden White House is... proposing a new rule that would strengthen protections for federal workers. But yeah, let's see. They're just, I'm guessing, going to plan to wholesale get rid of tons of people and plant in a bunch of conservatives of their sort. So that's kind of a big thing there. Yeah. Ending government protections for tens of thousands of federal employees.
Mm-hmm.
We're the people that keep the whole thing going, even when, you know, the White House does not get any real major legislative stuff done. Mm. Reinstituting an executive order known as Schedule F, which would reclassify a large chunk of those federal staff members as at-will employees. Mm. That's good. Good way to do things.
Yeah.
Just taking away all their benefits and all that. So just get a bunch of people that are just yes men for him, which, sure. That's a great thing to do, especially when he said at a Fox News town hall on Tuesday, stating he'd be a dictator only on day one so that he could close the border and start drilling.
Yeah, that's not happening.
Yeah, after that, I'm not a dictator, okay? It's like, oh yeah, definitely. That's how it's always worked when you give people like that extra power. And then you ask them to give it back, and like, no. So yeah, there you go. Some of the plans for him just scaling down the federal government just by getting rid of a bunch of people. So there you go. That's some of your fun stuff ahead.
Mm. Yep. That's why you got to vote, folks. Voting next year. I will be voting. Believe it. This next story is just fucking infuriating. So there was a woman in Texas who needed to get an emergency abortion, and the judge decided to grant it to her because it was an emergency, and it was getting ready to happen. And then, at like 11th hour, Texas's Attorney General Ken Paxton is demanding the Texas Supreme Court to stop it from happening. And for the record, they paused the ruling for the moment. Now, whether or not that pause stays in effect is completely up in the air. I'm hoping it doesn't, that they let it go ahead. But this is Texas we're talking about.
Yeah. He very much had an energy about him being like, you know, no matter what, this temporary restraining order that she got says anybody that does this abortion will be subject to all the penalties that they have on the books, like jail time and fines and all that stuff. trying to threaten people not to do it, no matter what. And it's like, yeah, that's a real great thing to be doing here, getting so mad about all this to do that. But yeah, this is something that's been kind of inevitable that was going to happen at some point. And yeah, kind of led to a weird point where she has this non-viable pregnancy that, if it were allowed to continue, she could potentially affect her ability to have children in the future, if not make her fully sterile for, you know, losing any chance of having kids in the future kind of stuff. And yeah, this is what you have, what you get when this kind of legislation is drafted by men who have no idea of any of the medical stuff that goes on behind all this stuff. They just want to stop abortion, and they don't care how many women die or, you know, suffer, you know, complications in the process.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And it's disgusting, but what are you going to, you know, we can't really do anything at the moment. But yeah, fuck Texas. Seriously. And not last but not least, we got this story of a retired cop who was just sentenced to 11 years in prison for his role in the January 6th insurrection.
Yep. There's a retired California police chief who led pro-Trump protests and called for traitors in government to be executed as an example. Was sentenced to 135 months, just over 11 years in prison, for his role in the insurrection. So, yeah, and also he did the very smart move of representing himself at this trial. Was convicted of conspiring to obstruct Congress's certification of Joe Biden's electoral victory, bringing a hatchet onto Capitol grounds and disorderly conduct. Let's see, he stopped short of entering the building, did not assault police officers during the riot. So at least he wasn't like one of those people, a former cop that attacks other cops. I guess, but very much doing everything up to that point here. So yeah, the assistant U.S. attorney Anthony Mariano saying this defendant's conduct was terrorism. Through his words and deeds on January 6th, Alan Hostetter was a terrorist. Nothing he did was patriotic. And I guess he denied wrongdoing and gave a lengthy conspiratorial rant claiming that the Capitol riot was the result of a false flag attack engineered by the federal government. I have full faith and confidence the truth will come out, and when it does, it will shock people. So there you go. And also he praised Vivek Ramaswamy for saying at Wednesday's GOP primary debates that the January 6th riot now does look like it was an inside job. So great job, everybody. And that's why he didn't get any leniency. So there you go.
Yeah. So yeah, fuck that guy.
Yeah, I guess I also talked about Ashley Babbitt, because he's got to say everything.
Yeah. Yeah, even though we've got the whole thing on tape happening, they said, stop it. Don't come in. We are authorized to shoot to kill. You know, several times, not just once, and very loudly.
Yeah.
And yet she still kept doing it, and so they had to discharge their firearm. But it's not all bad. We do have our week. And our hero this week is Senator John Fetterman, even though, you know, I have some issues with John Fetterman, especially regarding the current conflict in Gaza. But yeah, he hired George Santos, who, of course, was recently expelled from the House of Representatives and is now making bank doing stuff on Cameo. And he actually hired George Santos on Cameo to film a video to troll Senator Bob Menendez.
Yeah. Pretty good move. This is probably the most legitimate way George could be making money at this point. Though I think he's charging like $150 for a video. So he's certainly asking for a lot. I guess this one might have been $200 coming out of Fetterman's campaign funds. So, but yeah, they got the video embedded here if you want to watch it. Yeah, let's see. He said, I thought my ethically challenged colleague, Senator Menendez, could use some... Oh, that's what John said. Could use some encouragement given his substantial legal problems, so I approached a seasoned expert on the matter to give Bobby from Jersey some advice.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing gave him not much context for what it was being used for. So yeah. Yeah, here it is. Hey, Bobby, look, I don't think I need to tell you, but these people want to make you get in trouble, want to kick you out and make you run away. You make them put up or shut up. You stand your ground, sir, and don't get bogged down by all the haters out there. Stay strong. Merry Christmas.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So good use of that there. So, yeah, it's kind of one of the, at least the consistent things he's been doing of late is being like, well, we got rid of George Santos. What about Bob Menendez? Because I think they found out that the gold bars he had were branded from a thing that's related to a theft of some point.
Yeah.
Those gold bars. So he probably didn't get them, didn't like steal them, but somebody that gave them to him was involved in that at some point.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I don't know how that doesn't end in him getting expelled at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that was the... We're now moving on to the proper show proper. And our first story for the night is that Time Magazine has named singer-songwriter pop star sensation Taylor Swift as its person of the year. And that makes a lot of sense when you consider the fact that, one, she managed to get a shit ton of young Americans to register to vote in a way that frankly appalled the GOP, even though she made no specific mention of what political party you should align yourself with. She just said, you should vote. And, you know, they can't have people voting. They wouldn't be able to win an election anymore. Yeah. And then there's the fact that, you know, she went on a tour that is breaking record upon record upon record. The fact that she recorded a concert film that is breaking box office records. So, she has had a massive cultural impact this year.
Yeah. I think they're saying her tour has or will be earning $1 billion total for that, which is ridiculous.
Mm.
For that, somebody died in the process of one of her tour stops in South America. I forget where exactly, but somebody... Mm. Died through probably waiting in line and whatnot for so long that they just neglected water and all that, I'm assuming. But yeah, kind of wild stuff. And yeah, so that makes sense. She's the most popular figure in the entire world right now.
Mm-hmm.
And just making bank every single way as she's, you know, shedding all the financial shackles that she had previously on control of her music and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, pretty good choice. And I think one of the covers for it, she's got her cat on her shoulders. So she's very much got that kind of stuff going for her. She's, you know, keeping what's important to her at the focus.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So, yeah. And we found out that former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy will be retiring at the end of this year.
Yeah. Unfortunately, kind of just leave on his own terms, I guess. Unfortunately, not getting any of the medicine he deserves in his in return.
Mm-hmm.
And dealing with whenever the House sort of sways back to the Democrats' control and all that. But, yeah, very bad speaker, accomplished very little in his time and only got into power because he capitulated to the far right part of the House. And then they got him back when he started, you know, doing the things he's supposed to keep the government afloat. That they didn't like, so he deserves every bit of criticism he's going to get, but he's going to largely go away with plenty of money and all that to his name. So, yeah, he can go fuck off for all we care at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And next up, Hunter Biden has been indicted on 9 counts related to federal tax offenses. Which, I mean, yeah, that's a problem. But let's be honest, they don't really give a shit about the taxes, do they?
No, but let's see. This comes from out of California from a federal grand jury.
Mm-hmm.
3 felony tax offenses and 6 misdemeanor tax offenses. Coming from the special counsel, David Weiss's long-running investigation.
Mm-hmm.
So, not too surprising. That's been going on for quite a while now. And, yeah, faces a maximum penalty of 17 years in prison, though I'm probably going to assume that they're going to come to an understanding and probably not do any time at all.
Mm-hmm.
Probably just have them pay the money back and all that, and and whatever, some slap on the wrist kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there you go.
Yeah. So yeah, that's happening. And speaking of the House of Representatives, they voted to censure Representative Jamal Bowman for pulling the fire alarm a few months ago, because I'm guessing after the embarrassment that happened with George Santos, they feel like they got to save face by doing something equally, do something of equal measure, more or less.
Yeah. Let's see, 214-191 vote to censure Bowman.
Mm-hmm.
I think 3 Dems voted for it. Mm-hmm. Cause yeah, they've lost some people and there's a very slim majority at this point, for them. But yeah, let's see. Yeah, nothing really is going to come of this. They're just trying to get back at him as this thing that was a pretty minor thing in the grand scheme. So, yeah. And he's already, like, paid a fine and had 3 months of probation from, the trial he went through before. So that was more of an actual punishment than this is. This is just to make an example of him. And, so they're to be taken seriously, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever that means.
Mm.
So there you go.
Yeah. And going on from there, a Nevada grand jury indicted 6 individuals in former President Trump's fake elector scheme. So yeah, that's also going on.
Yeah. Yeah, 6 individuals who submitted documents falsely attesting that they were the state's official presidential electors and that Donald Trump won Nevada in the 2020 election.
Mm-hmm.
They have all faced criminal charges in 3 swing states for these these fake electors, Nevada, Michigan, and Georgia. An illegal settlement was also announced Wednesday regarding false electors in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the Nevada Republican Party chair, Michael McDonald, is among those charged in the state. They have the other 5 here. I don't know any of them. So they face 2 felony charges apiece, offering a false instrument for filing and uttering a forged instrument, according to a release from the state attorney general. So, yeah, I don't know what sort of potential sentencing we'll get out of that, but they definitely deserve something for participating in this fake elector scheme.
Yeah, seriously. And moving on into the tech sector. And as anybody has noticed, has been paying attention knows, the tech sector has not been doing well. There's been a lot of shrinkage and layoffs and such. Because, frankly, the tech sector kind of overplayed its hand and hasn't really recovered very well. And Spotify basically just joined their group. They're laying off 17% of their staff in the latest batch of tech layoffs.
Yeah. Let's see. It equates to about 1,500 jobs.
Mm-hmm.
They have about 9,000 total, so 17% would be about 1,500 mm-hmm. jobs, which I guess might be their third round of layoffs this year, which is unfortunate. But at least there was some accountability for this, because I believe the CFO resigned
mm-hmm.
as a result of this. So there's somebody taking accountability
mm-hmm.
For that. So that's something. Seems yeah. like departing employees will be offered approximately 5 months of severance pay, mm-hmm. plus healthcare coverage, vacation pay, immigration support, and 2 months worth of career search assistance. So there you go. That's something at least.
Mm-hmm.
Not leave them high and dry as the holidays approach. So
mm-hmm.
they just get something there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Continuing from there, Disney Plus has now added Hulu content in a beta test for both Hulu and Disney Plus.
Yeah. It's not all Hulu content, at mm-hmm. least for now. It's like a selection of stuff for people to check out.
Mm.
I think I'm technically able to do this, even though I didn't get the Disney Plus and Hulu bundle.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just anybody that has both of that, but I have not gotten onto Disney Plus to see what that means.
Because
mm-hmm. already being on the Hulu, they got a bunch of Disney Plus stuff there already.
Mm.
As it is. There's like some of the Marvel stuff and mm-hmm. Muppets and that kind of stuff on there. So it's definitely a decent bit there for that. So that saves you at least a little bit of looking for, you know, whatever you want to watch on one or the other, potentially. But also, you don't have any, confidence that, like, oh, there's going to be everything, so you only need one app. I think that's the ultimate goal, but that's not mm-hmm. there yet. So, yeah, that's nice to see, but we'll see when that goes, you know, launches wide for everybody.
Mm. Yeah. And moving on from speaking of Disney Plus, Hideo Kojima's documentary streaming on Disney Plus.
Yeah, this is a Death Stranding documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know if they have it here. I was going to say the poster for it specifically calls that out. Otherwise, it's just called Hideo Kojima Connecting Worlds.
Mm-hmm.
But it has a bunch of people in it. George Miller, Guillermo del Toro, Norman Reedus, Nicholas Winding Refn, Grimes,
mm-hmm.
Woodkid, Churches, Mamoru Oshii, mm-hmm. Shinji Mikami, Shinya Tsukamoto.
Mm-hmm.
Those last two at least are devs that he's probably worked with.
Yeah.
Or just known for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
60-minute film had its world premiere at the Tribeca Film Festival in New York back in June. So seems pretty solid. There's a trailer if you want to watch it. But yeah, it's kind of a surprising pick for Disney Plus, but it gives them some gaming contents that they don't necessarily have normally. So there you go. That's something to check out. I think it'll be next year at some point.
Mm-hmm.
No date yet on it. So there you go.
Mm. Yep. And continuing with our entertainment stuff, Max has signed an exclusive deal with A24 to bring their movies exclusive to HBO and Max.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's a big deal because those are movies they just can't indiscriminately, you know, cut from the service.
Mm-hmm.
Actively getting a bunch of that stuff. Yeah, that comes after the expiration of their previous deal with Paramount or Showtime, technically. You'll get their stuff exclusively on HBO Max and Cinemax after their theatrical runs.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Yeah, Priscilla will be a part of that. The Iron Claw.
Mm.
And Dream Scenario, the new Nicolas Cage thing. So
yeah.
So yeah, that's this list of a bunch of other stuff here that you can check out. So
yeah,
that's neat if you have Max.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. We also found out, speaking of Max, that Barbie will be debuting on Max December 15th. So I think that's, let me check. Yeah, that's Friday. So
yeah, next week.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, if you have not checked it out, you can do that then.
Mm-hmm.
That was a movie that you could have gotten the Blu-ray for $10 mm-hmm. During Black Friday. So be cheaper than having a 1 month of Max. So, but you'll be able to check it out. So definitely worth watching.
Mm. Yeah. And we also found out that Twisted Metal will be renewed for a second season at Peacock. So that's also coming.
Yeah, that got announced at the Game Awards. So that's cool. Mm.
Which we will be talking about on Day Zero Update tomorrow. So
yeah. Yeah. Should be a fun season. It's where they're getting to the actual Twisted Metal tournament.
Mm-hmm.
As the first season is kind of set up of various characters before that whole thing gets that happens. So yeah, that'll be fun.
Mm.
Hopefully not too long before we get to watch that.
Yeah. Hope so. And finally, we've got a couple of trailers here. We got an official Prime Video's Mr. and Mrs. Smith season one.
Yeah. So yeah, kind of adapting that for a series.
Mm-hmm.
Has some neat talent to it as Donald Glover's the husband there.
Mm-hmm.
John Smith. I don't know who the wife is, unfortunately. They don't mention it here in the description who's playing that, but looks pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Glover's always a good choice for many roles.
Mm.
Maybe this is it. Maya Erskine. I don't recognize her from anything that comes off the tongue, but yeah, that'll be starting February 2nd, so you can watch that on Groundhog Day.
Yep. And we also got an official trailer for Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire.
Yep. Continuing the dumb Godzilla universe here, or technically the Monsterverse.
Mm-hmm.
Follows the events of Godzilla vs. Kong, where they find out the Hollow Earth theory is real.
Mm-hmm.
And they're dealing with the ramifications of humans finding out about that.
Mm-hmm.
And dealing with all that, and there's a new bad guy that Godzilla and King Kong are gonna work together to fight. And that's some wild stuff, so yeah. It'll be fun to see what more dumb stuff happens here. They don't have a date, they just say 2024.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's I don't know if this is like a giant orangutan monkey or something like this. I don't know if it's based off of any particular breed of ape for that, but it's something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see Godzilla's got much better speed now than he used to when that first Godzilla movie.
Mm-hmm.
He was moving pretty slow. Now he's just running around. He's got red energy now.
Yep.
So I think one of the comments is like, oh, Goku's got he's got Super Saiyan Rose energy now.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. There you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a big dumb spectacle and we're all here.
Yeah.
And finally, last but not least, we got an official trailer for Netflix adaptation of Yu Yu Hakusho.
Yeah. Looks pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
From what it is, it looks like they're leading up to the dark tournaments in this. Because, they do have Toguro in there, but if you remember your Yu Yu Hakusho, they fight him before the tournaments. They get a big showdown, and then he basically tells them to fight him at the dark tournament or else he's going to kill him. That's how they end up going to the demon realm to go take part in that.
Mm.
But you get a good look at a lot of the characters there with Genkai, the old lady torments Yusuke as he's getting trained and all that.
Mm.
So yeah, looks pretty solid.
Yeah.
We'll see if it turns out to be as good as One Piece or not. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. We will see. I hope it's as good as One Piece.
Yeah. And that's out next week on the 14th.
Yep. Well, you'll definitely see it and be able to report back to us. So,
yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, in the meantime, we have finished a show. We have got a show for you, folks. So, with that, I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, or something you want to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. Yeah, so we're going to go ahead and wind it down here for tonight. If you liked what you heard, please do not hesitate to share us with your friends, your family, your coworkers, your casual acquaintances, your mortal enemies, and everyone in between. Just, you know, don't do it during holiday shopping because people are already tense enough as it is, and I've already seen 3 fist fights this week. So, yeah, just maybe one, you know, time and place for the lesson. Time and a place for everything. For everything, there is a season, as they say. But yeah, we're going to go ahead and wind it down here. Thank you once again, Chris, for joining me. And we are going to go ahead and end it. We will see you all next week. Bye, everybody.